This mini bonus episode of Pomcast is sponsored by our Christmas party main sponsors, The Fibre Company. Founded in 2003, The Fibre Company is an independent yarn producer that originally spun and hand-dyed their yarns in a small textile mill on the coast of Maine in New England.
From those humble beginnings to today's global brand now based in the UK, The Fibre Company works with a variety of producers and artisans, continuing to create yarns that delight and inspire the enthusiast maker.
So thank you, Fibre Company, for sponsoring our Christmas party and this bonus podcast.
Woohoo!
Hello! And welcome to this bonus episode of the Pomcast. I'm Lydia Gluck, and I'm here for the second time this month.
Woohoo!
With the lovely Sophie Scott.
Hello.
Hello, Sophie.
Hello. So we're calling this little bonus the mini feature.
Mm-hmm.
Short rows. So you've got a short rows episode. Just inserting a little extra wedge of fabric of audio goodness into your knitting lives and ears.
Yes, indeed we are. So yeah, we're very excited to be bringing you this little bonus with an interview and a top three, which we'll tell you more about in a moment. But before that, we can tell you a little bit about our Christmas party.
Oh, hey, I love Christmas. Do you?
Christmas loves you too.
Oh.
Hey!
And parties?
I also like parties, yes.
Do you like browsing yarn?
Yes.
Do you like having a little drinky?
Yes.
Listening to live music?
Always.
Hanging out with all the knitting folk and people who like this as
They're
well?
They're my favourite folks!
You need to get yourself to the pom-pom Christmas party.
You do indeed. So this year will be our fourth
annual
pom-pom Christmas party here in London. And it will be at 4749 Tanner Street, which is a lovely old building, tannery perhaps?
It is. It used to be a Victorian tannery, hence the name Tanner Street.
Exactly, which is down near London Bridge. So if you are in London, then do come along. We will have fun, beautiful things to buy. We will have live music. There will be drinking involved, that's for sure. And there's lots more about that on our website. And for those of you that can't make it this year, you'll be with us in spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And,
best of spirit.
Exactly. And we look forward to hanging out with you guys some other time soon.
Yes. www.pompommag.com. to get your tickets.
Indeedy.
So for this bonus episode, cast your mind back to the beginning of October when we went to see Yarn, the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And we spoke to Christian Aurora, who's the writer and executive producer, and Heather Millard, who's the producer. And I say we, Lydia had laryngitis at the time.
I did. I lost my voice for almost an entire week.
Yeah.
And that included the weekend in which we were involved in this lovely screening.
Had to do lots of talking.
Yeah, so there was a screening. Some of you guys were there, I know, screening at Hackney Picture House, which isn't so far from PPHQ London.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a little pop-up market, and Vicky Howell was there with her new yarn and did a lovely intro for the film. So she did the intro, and Sophie and I were supposed to interview Christian and Heather together. Ooh, that's a fun little rhyme.
Yeah.
But yes, I was mute at the time, so I was on sound monitoring and thumbs up duty.
Yes. So we had Lydia doing that, which is excellent. So Yarn the Movie, if you haven't heard us talk about it in previous podcasts, it's a film that sort of celebrates people who use yarn as the medium in their life.
Yes.
If you were interested in seeing the film, you didn't get to see it, we recommend going to www.yarnfilm.com for more info. You can also request a screening, see where one's going to be.
Yeah.
You can pre-order the digital thing of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Not the digital purchase. What would it be? The digital ethereal...
You can download it.
You can purchase it to pre-order it to download it, I think.
Cool.
Yes.
Hey, so, and there'll be lots of information on that website. And even if you haven't seen the film, I think it's an interesting interview. But hey, maybe if you haven't seen it, this is a good opportunity to try and see it.
Yeah.
Before you listen. But hey, guys, as if you're going to wait to listen to us. Come on.
So coming up, this is live at
Hackney Picture House.
Yeah. We have ask is, what's your background with yarn and how did you come to start making the film?
Okay, well, I'm going to have to fess up here. I don't have a background in yarn. I don't need. I'm going to all crochet. I'm going to confess that right off the bat. No, I mean, the way the idea came about, because all films start from somewhere, but the way the film came about was actually me reflecting on the show that many of you, I imagine, may have watched or would have heard of, called The Great British Bake Off. And I was thinking about, well, you know, what is equally like ordinary that everybody can do, like baking, that could become mainstream. And I just thought of knitting, and I was having a cup of coffee with Ella, actually in Finland. She was over from Iceland, and we were both at a film festival. And I said, I got this idea to do something about knitting. I didn't even call it yarn, doing something about knitting, because I think it could be as mainstream as baking. And there seems to be lots of art around it. What do you think? And she said, great idea. And then the next thing I knew, she'd raised all this money for it. And then we were off making the film. So, it, you know, I suppose I can thank the Great British Bake Off for having brought us here today.
And Heather, how are you? What's your background with yarn?
I don't knit or crochet, although I'm learning at the moment, but my mum knits, and she's here.
Oh, hi.
And she's also crocheting as well, so
I was going to say, you're wearing good knitwear, so I was,
exactly.
I was curious.
And I've always been on my way to learning to crochet or knit, but I've never really given myself the time, I suppose, and now I really want to.
Good. You're busy promoting a movie at the moment, but soon.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good marketplace on, I hear, so it gets stocked up. So the film has such a wonderful range of artists and creatives and very inspiring range of people. How do you start the process of narrowing down and finding who's going to be involved in the film?
I think the very beginning, at least, when Christian and I had this discussion in Finland, we were just sending each other photographs and links that we were finding on the internet of interesting things that were happening with yarn. And that's really how it started. And then we started to narrow it down to people that we thought would be interesting to feature in a film. And then we started developing, and we visited Olek in Poland quite early on. We visited Tinna in Iceland, although I'm based there. Christian came over. And we soon fell in love with the four characters that we have in the film.
And I think what they all sort of had in common was that they were all travellers in some way. And I think that was important for the film. It's also, for a start, a film needs, you know, we wanted to show different bits of the world, and it showed that yarn is and this art and this craft is quite a universal thing. Everybody does it in different forms sometimes around the world. We wanted to reflect that, and so we also needed people who didn't stay home so much and did get out and go and do things. And I think that that was how we narrowed down the people that we chose. Olek in particular, who lives out of a suitcase, really, and is travelling everywhere. She's nominally based in Brooklyn, but if you follow her on Instagram, she's very entertaining on Instagram, you'll always find her in different places. And, you know, having people who were doing things in public was really important for us, because that's what provides the stuff in the film.
And we also really wanted to have characters that complement one another, but also contradict one another and have a conflict within the film. And that's really why we narrowed down to these four in particular.
Interesting. Yeah, there's a good global spread, which is very nice to see. So at the beginning of the film, Tinna, she sort of sets the tone almost by saying, you know, a woman knits, and so many women throughout history who've knitted. When a man does it, everyone gets excited. And then there is, obviously, there's chaps in the film as well, but it sets the theme almost. There's a very strong female force within the creative practice that people have. Was that a conscious decision, or how do you think that lends itself to the film?
I think initially when we were developing the film, we were not restricting ourselves to just wanting to focus on women in this area. But actually the four characters that we found, we thought would make the best film So that's why we selected them. It wasn't because we wanted to make a film with only women in, but
they fit together. I think Britain has got a bit of a has had a bit of a knitting history, particularly a knitting history with men. Some people may have heard of Kath Facet, who's actually an American but was based.
You've got the right character. I'll just drop that name. Yeah.
and I think there was even the BBC did a knitting series in the mid 60s, and that was hosted by a bloke. Maybe not so surprising because so many things were hosted by blokes at that point. But and I think in Iceland, knitting up until relatively recently, like in the last 100 years. Was done by men, 150 years was done by men because it was fishermen knitting, you know, either repairing their nets or knitting their own sweaters. So, you know, I think, sorry, that's maybe a tangent. I think those characters do hold together. We weren't trying to make an explicitly, let's call it, feminist film, but I think it was interesting to hear what Tim said about it because, you know, those issues are in the film, the issues of whether it's a woman's craft or not. And I think the film, I hope the film is fairly even-handed about that.
I hope it's even-handed, but at the same time, I hope it can sort of initiate discussions about gender equality in the arts. So that's what I really hope people will take away from it too.
Interesting. So another big discussion, I think a topic that's debated a lot in the film and sort of within this sort of world in general is the debate of art versus craft and how you define that. How did you want the film to add to that discussion?
That's just it, we wanted it to add to that discussion. Okay. As filmmakers, we really didn't want to take a stance of whether it could be considered as an art or only a craft. Mm-hmm. We wanted to present the four characters that we have and show the conflicts within the industry of using yarn, I think.
I mean, I think the bit that I was particularly interested in, and again, why Oleg, you know, I think she's such a strong character, is the public art side of it, the street art, if you like. Maybe public art's a better word. You know, which goes all the way to yarn bombing or yarn storming. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's interesting. I think there are a few art forms that happen out in the real world, aren't there? And, street theatre or street installations, but art can sometimes be seen as quite a rarefied thing in galleries. And when you do get the chance to take it out on the street to interact with people, as Oleg does a lot, but also as Toshiko, with her play structures, you know, that's all public art. And I find that personally really interesting, as well as filmically, because it means you can show people actually using it, engaging with it. So, you know, I think the film is probably more on the art line, the art side of it than on the craft side. And, you know, make no apologies for that. It's because there was lots of interesting stuff going on in the art space.
Interesting. All right. So the film's travelled globally. Obviously, we're very pleased to have it here in London, the UK. Obviously, you've had a hopefully good response from the yarn community. How have people interacted with it from the non-yarn community? Do you have any, like, you know, insight in that?
I don't actually. Do you know, one of the things about putting things out in the world is that you just put them out to the community now, and then they, you know, as here, everybody brings their knitting, or they, you know, there's an event up on the fifth floor. I think that's wonderful. And actually, it's much better if we aren't controlling it in some way. Do you know what I mean? I think putting a film out there and saying, well, you know, here it is, we've done it, we had you in mind, but we don't know the different ways you're going to use it. That's what I wanted to do at the beginning. I wanted to find something like I was saying with baking, which is ordinary, which everybody does, which everybody thinks is theirs, and then here's a film for that audience. So, you know, I've been to other screenings. The other screenings I've been to have, as it happens, been with the yarn community. So I'm afraid I couldn't tell you what it's been like when we've had non-yarners in the cinema, can you?
No one rioting or anything.
We just released the film in Iceland, and it was screening for 3 weeks in the cinema. And at the premiere, we had a variety of people come to see the film. And just, a, I don't know, 20% of those were in the Icelandic yarn community, I would say. And the other 80% were friends or family or colleagues or other filmmakers. And the response was just incredible. They really understood the film. They understood the deeper meaning within the film and really connected to it on a different level to what we experienced in the US. For example, when you see the sheep in the snow and then Tinna leaving for Barcelona in the sun, they all felt a sense of relief in the film that they were, that the sunshine was coming for somebody in Iceland. And it was really nice to have people that were not connecting to it necessarily because of the yarn in the film.
The sort of the cultural connections that we can all sort of find within it. At the beginning, and I asked, did you come from a yarn background, either of you? Has doing making this film sort of changed your view, or has it surprised you in any way? Or
just to go back to your first question, although we don't knit and crochet, there are two other directors involved in the film, and Thorður, he learned knitting at school. So we have one male knitter within the film. And Una, she grew up, her mother was a head of the textile department in Iceland for 25 years, and her grandfather was a weaver. So she was always around yarn. They were in Iceland, when you grow up in Iceland, which I haven't, you are always around yarn. So they connect, and I've just taken away from your other question.
No, of course, it's interesting. I'm here to listen about your interesting tidbits of yarn. You're telling a good yarn, so there we go. I was going to say, doing this film, have you had any surprises or has it changed your opinion on something? If yes, coming from a background that's not necessarily involved in yarn.
I think absolutely. I mean, just from the very beginning of the idea even, we found out that yarn was so much bigger than what we had perhaps first perceived.
Yeah.
It's completely changed our opinion.
No, I think for me, the thing, maybe it's particular to the characters we followed, and I'm not going to try and generalise from it, but it's the idea that people who are doing arts and crafts are often doing it they're always doing it for a reason. Sometimes that reason is personal. Sometimes it can be quite political. They've got something to say, and they'll find any way to say it and to tell the stories they want to tell or support the cause that they want to support. And I think it's great to see that you can do it whatever whatever materials or medium you're using, you can have your say, I suppose. And that's because before I did think, well, it is a craft, it's a domestic craft, I didn't appreciate that it was such a part of modern art, actually, that textile art was so important. And I didn't really appreciate how widespread the community was. I'd sort of heard of Etsy and Ravelry and, how big it is on Pinterest and all that, but I'm not sure I really appreciated it.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So I really loved how the circus used yarn as a metaphor, and sort of a lot of people use the medium as an explanation, like a story for their life and their practice and their art. What's the main sort of story that you'd like people to take away from this film?
Well, I think it's what I just said, actually, about, if you've got something to say, you'll find a way of saying it, actually. I think, the circus is a good example. I mean, she's, Tilda, who's she's the director of the circus and also a professor of, I think she's the only professor of the circus in Europe, and lives and works in Stockholm, I don't know if it's completely clear in the film, but the piece that they're doing is called Knitting Piece, P-E-A-C-E, and what she's always said is that peace is something that she wanted Knitting Piece to stand for something impossible. So you can't knit peace. Okay, she could have said anything, I suppose, but she said you can't knit peace, so it's impossible. But it's something that you should strive for. And from that, she then created this circus piece around peace. But what inspired her to do it was a belief in, the need to create a more peaceful world. So, you know, I think it's brilliant to go from that to creating a bit of contemporary circus which makes use of all of those different skills that those circus performers have. Not sure if I've answered a question or not, but that's a message, I suppose. It's to say that if you're creative, you will find a way.
And for me, for what I want people to take away from the film, I think being sort of new to yarn ourselves, it's really nice for, we really hope that people can be inspired by the film and realize that you can do so much with yarn. It's not just for making clothing and, you know, the stereotypical things you imagine with yarn, which are very important, but you can do so much more. And I think on another level, if it can help to sort of open up debate about the art and the craft debate, and also about gender equality in the arts, and then for me, that's really important.
Wonderful. Well, maybe you should open it up to the audience, have a little Q&A. Yeah?
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you again to Christian and Heather for taking the time out to talk to us after we watched their film, or to talk. Yes, they talked to us and I could only nod and smile back, but I think that was enough.
Yeah, and it was really nice. I think thanks to everyone who came.
Oh,
made
yeah.
Such a wonderful event and came and said hi and yeah, hung out afterwards. Yeah. Really good to meet people.
Yeah, as always. And it was great of Hackney Picture House to be so accommodating of the knitting world.
Yeah.
And there was beautiful, Anna of Wild and Woolly did lots of lovely decorating at Hackney Pitch House to make it just the knittiest place in East London.
The knittiest damn place in East London.
So that was wonderful. So thanks, of course, to her as well and to all the vendors. We had a lovely day. And on the film-related theme, we didn't do a top three for the previous episode, as you guys might be aware, although it seems like you all enjoyed Eli's hilarious reading of the horror stories.
He did do a pretty good job.
I know, the guy should be a voice actor, am I right?
Yeah, we're going to work on this. We're his agents now. So.
Yeah, so any requests come to us.
Yeah.
But we decided to do a little top three here.
Yeah, top three films or movies.
Mm-hmm.
Talkies, you know.
Yeah.
Go to the cinematic viewing theatre.
Exactly.
You like to see a story with moving images.
I do that quite frequently.
Well, good. I can't believe we haven't done top films yet.
I know, it seems strange.
I think we did a thing, Kate of A Playful Day asked us to do a little guest feature. That was a couple of years ago now.
Yeah, that's true.
And we did Christmas films.
Yeah, because I feel like I remember doing Christmas films.
Yeah.
We've done top three books and top three albums.
Yep, so it seems logical within the canon of favourite things to have. That we go for films.
Indeed. Okay, do you want to go first, Sophie
Scott?
Yeah,
I found this hard. I don't think I go to the cinema as much as maybe used to.
I don't go to the cinema that much, and I'm famous amongst my friends for having a really embarrassing knowledge of films and actors. Megan despairs of me because she tries to have like quite a normal conversation about a well-known actor, and I'm like, who's that? I don't know.
Well, hey, you know a lot of stuff about other stuff.
That's true. I know all the lyrics to all the Leonard Cohen songs.
That was diplomatic.
We love you, Leonard.
Oh, we love you, Leonard.
Okay, so go on then, Sophie.
Okay, I feel like I get lost in a time warp of me liking films from when I was 15 and I still like the same films. I haven't become any more sophisticated or indeed any less introspective and romantic in my ideals of what the world is.
Well, go on.
So, hey, here we go.
Number three.
That introspective, shoegazing classic of Wes Anderson, The Royal Tenenbaums.
Ooh, good choice.
Oh, thanks.
That's a wonderful film. Although I've got to say, it's not my favourite Wes Anderson film.
What's your favourite?
My favourite is the Darjeeling Limited.
Oh, that is good. Okay,
I
think I could have gone for any of his because as a cinematic producer, he is the colour and the consideration of how a shot is framed. He's very unique and he's very considerate in that. And I think that's what makes a lot of his films very pleasing to watch.
Yeah, they are very beautiful.
The Royal Tenenbaums, I mean, any of his films, has a definitive colour scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of about a dysfunctional family. And I don't think it's particularly... I was trying to think why I like it. I don't think it's particularly the story is anything dramatically gripping more than any one of his, of the world.
Yeah.
but it's very...
They're always very well-paced as well, aren't they? What was the film that came out, the more recent one, not the Budapest Hotel, but the other one about the two kids who went camping together?
Oh, Moonrise
together.
Kingdom.
That was lovely. I really liked that as well.
I think, if you haven't explored his work as...
His oeuvre.
His oeuvre. Yes, it's a good phrase.
His oeuvre? No. What?
I think Gwyneth Paltrow's pretty kick-ass in that. There's a good soundtrack. Always
amazing soundtrack. So yeah, that's true.
Good. Number two, seemingly introspective and quiet in its format, Lost in Translation.
Interesting.
By Sofia Coppola?
Uh-huh. With Mr. Johansson.
And Ms. Bill Murray.
And Ms. Murray.
Two lost souls finding themselves in Japan. Mm-hmm. I remember talking to a friend who was from Japan, and he said, yeah, that film's kind of misleading because, you know, Japan's not that quiet, and that film's very quiet. He's like, if we went to Japan, like me and him, it's like, we'd mess the city up like Godzilla. And I was like, okay, I kind of understand what you mean. That sounds fun. But anyway, side note. Yeah, I think as a film, again, similar to Mr. Anderson's, there's a nice pace, and just a little insight you have into what Japan, or indeed the colours and the light and the space and the culture.
Yeah.
Good soundtrack as well.
She knits in it.
She knits. There's a very nice little scene, yes, where she's like, oh, is this long enough? She's knitting a blue scarf. Something's very quiet, zen.
Yeah.
Thoughtful. Yes. I've gone for films, not only favourite films I've watched countless times.
Yeah.
And will continue to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So number one, what's it going to be?
Oh boy.
It's going to be that classic, Some Like It Hot.
Ah, you know, I've never seen that film.
Oh, it's a humdinger, baby. I'd put it at number one if I had to listen.
Okay, well, tell me about it.
So, it's 1920s, and there's two characters who, what are they? They're Jack Lemmon and Tony Lee Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
And they play instruments in a band, and then they get involved. They, like, are witnesses to a murder. Mm. So they've got to hide. What's the best way to hide? They dress up as women and are in a band that's travelling somewhere. Who else is in the band? It's Ms. Marilyn Monroe playing the ukulele. Pretty cool. And the writing and the humour is so sharp. And every time I watch it, I find a bit that's funny in it that I didn't remember. Or, mm-hmm. like, I didn't realise how clever that little play on words was, that little thing. It's very quick. And great music again.
Mm-hmm.
This is only the one film that doesn't have Bill Murray in. My other two
films. It feels like a theme emerging here.
If only. But it's fun, and it's very, it feels fresh every time you watch it, but it's endlessly enjoyable. And
well, I shall make sure, because I think I might have seen bits of it, actually. I just don't see
it. It's a classic, and there's a reason why it should be, you know, so highly revered in the...
In the canon.
In the canon.
The world film oeuvre.
Yes. So there we go. That's what I'd say. Some Like It Hot. Jazz.
Jazz. Well, interesting. So your films are all alike in some ways, I think, or at least the first two were. And I think my two of the three of mine will be revealing of mine.
Okay. I'm interested. I don't know actually what you picked. So.
Well, I think, and suddenly, now that we've been talking, I've like suddenly remembered lots of other films that I love, but I'm going to stick with my three. Okay, so at number three is a German film called The Lives of Others.
Okay. Which I've heard of this, but I don't know anything about
it. I actually haven't seen it for years, but I watched it. It came out in sort of the mid-2000s. I say that like I don't know. I actually looked it up. 2006.
Oh,
right. And I remember the first time I saw it just thinking it was really beautiful. And I have it on DVD, actually, which I don't think I have anything that plays DVDs anymore. But, you know, I'm still dedicated to it.
I've been carrying it really fast on your finger. You
if I just hold it up to my ear. It's like the sea. It's like holding a shell up. I'm like... Oh. But the film is about a Stasi officer who is so there's a playwright who the state has decided is in opposition to East Germany's ideals, and they're being sort of listened to and tracked by this Stasi officer. And he basically, so it's a playwright and his girlfriend, and the officer, it becomes clear that the reason the playwright is being tracked isn't, I mean, he probably does have anti-East German ideas, but it's mostly because one of the other agents is interested in his girlfriend, essentially. And the Stasi officer who's tracking them, whose name escapes me, he basically becomes sympathetic with the couple. And it's just a really lovely film. But I mean, it's sad because lots of sad things happen. But I think it is very poignant. And it's also very interesting because I think when I first saw it, I didn't really know anything about East and West Germany, or I didn't know much. And apparently it's quite a kind of accurate depiction in lots of, you know, as accurate as a sort of traumatized film can be. Yeah, and I remember absolutely loving it. And I haven't actually seen it for quite a long time, but when I was thinking, what are my top three films? I was like, Lives of Others has to be in there. And I think it's also got a lovely name. What a beautiful name for a film. Lives of Others.
Interesting.
It's lovely.
Check it out.
So that's that one. And, okay, at number two, I have the best musical of all time, in my humble opinion, which is Cabaret.
Yes, all right.
With Liza Minnelli.
It's great. She's like doing jazz
Bob Fosse,
hands.
Yeah.
She's doing jazz hands and she's saying it. I'm like, she's going to say Cabaret. She's going to say Cabaret.
It was really hard to decide between this and my favourite, because Cabaret, when I first saw Cabaret, I think I was probably 16, and I just fell in love with it. I love singing. I really like musicals. There are lots of bad musicals, I know, but there's lots of bad films. I don't really feel like that's like a slur on the genre. And I think one of the good things about Cabaret, if you're not a fan of musicals because, you know, you don't like the idea of people just bursting into song, all of the music in Cabaret is at a cabaret nightclub, more or less, or it's not people. There's like one bit, I think, where people burst into song, but there's kind of context for all of the singing. It's not, it kind of feels a bit more like those songs might just kind of happen. But Liza Minnelli is incredible. The costumes are beautiful. The songs are absolutely brilliant. The dancing's amazing. But it's also, I think the first time I saw it, this is weird, I've chosen two films about Germany, because it's set against the backdrop of the rise of Hitler, basically, and the fall of the Weimar Republic. And so it's that kind of era in Germany when Berlin was one of the kind of most free and kind of, everybody was there doing crazy, cool cabaret dancing and listening to jazz and being kind of free. But I think, so the first time I saw it, I was just like, cool, songs, yay! And then, you know, since then I've watched it many, many times. And it basically, from the second time I saw it, I was like, wow, how did I miss? Because it's very beautifully done, all of the references to what's going on. Because the lead story is Liza Minnelli, and I think the character's name is Brian, but I forget who the actor is who plays the friend that she makes, who they become romantically involved. And then there's kind of a love triangle later on. And it's just, I just love it. Basically, I've watched it many, many, many times. I used to have, I still do actually have the record, the soundtrack on LP. And I used to listen to it loads. Just the soundtrack, don't even need to be watching the film. And actually, Cabaret is one of my favourite, like the title track is one of my favourite karaoke songs.
Wow, a winner all round then.
I think it's wonderful. I love it so much. Oh. It makes me really, it's one of those ones where you're like, please like it too, because otherwise you don't like me.
I haven't seen it, so we're going to have to do
that. Oh boy.
That final test of friendship. I mean.
Yep. Well, okay, and then number one, anybody who knows me vaguely probably already knows this, that my favourite film in the whole world is an animated, essentially a children's film, although it is based on a fantasy novel that was written for adults.
I just mouthed it, Lydia, and I got it
and
right.
And I nodded, yeah.
I was like, is this?
So the novel was written, and I have read the book. I think I read it like in my early 20s. And it's by a man called Peter Beagle. Mm-hmm. And the film / book is called The Last Unicorn. And basically,
so joy in your face.
Basically, it's been my favourite film since I was about 6 years old. And in my mind, it bears up to adult viewing, but I really don't know
repeated
if that's just because
viewing.
I love it so much. And it is, it's actually, well, it's got loads of really brilliant voice actors in it. They just happened, it should have been, it was one of those films that kind of almost could have been a big sort of commercial success, but it was like a little bit too weird. And so it just became a cult success, essentially. And there's a lot of fans of The Last Unicorn. But the animation is very beautiful. It's kind of almost anime style. And I think some of the animators who worked on it went to work for Studio Ghibli. It's quite high grade. Yeah. And a lot of the backdrops, the paintings, are incredibly beautiful. But it's got Christopher Lee is in it. Angela Lansbury's in it. Mia Farrow's in it. And a few other sort of vaguely well-known voice actors. So just that alone, like I only found that out about 4 years ago. Until then, I had no idea really that there was anyone famous in it at all. But it's a very, you know, it is a story about a unicorn who goes on a quest because she is the last. She's like, am I the last unicorn? And
is she?
Well, she has to save the other unicorns.
Oh, okay. I'm going to watch. I haven't seen any of the films that you've talked
about. And the music is written by the band America, or the guy from, I can't remember what his name is now. Yeah, it's performed by the band America. They wrote songs specially for the film, which I know all the words to all of them, obviously. But I find it's like a comfort blanket. It just, if I'm feeling sad, and even though it's not got a sort of traditional happy ending in it, there is a kind of love-esque story or like several kind of relationships that grow throughout the film, but it's not got "and they lived happily ever after" as the ending, which I think is very important to me. I don't find that a compelling ending. And actually there's just so many lines that me and my brothers and sisters will quote to each other from The Last Unicorn, and one of them is "there are no happy endings because nothing ends." But actually, so there's that kind of except for the film, which does end, but you can just watch it again, guys.
And you know what, actually this this podcast might have to end.
It might. I know. So they lied. Are you saying that he lied?
No, because
the good prince lied.
No, because we'll be back. It doesn't end.
That's true.
Well, there we go. This was a little bonus Short Rose episode.
Yeah, so, well, we'll be back in November, as always, with a regular sort of...
Full-size
episode with all the trimmings. And we look forward to chatting to you then.
If you have any feedback, queries, you need more Short Rose, you need bonus bit bobbles.
You have more ideas of things that Eli can read in funny voices.
Yeah. Send us an email, which is podcast@pompommag.com.
Indeed.
And to keep up to date with all the info about the podcast, go to pompommag.com/podcast.
Exactly.
So see you then.
We love you.
Bye. Pomcast is produced by Lydia Gluck and Sophie Scott, with lots of help from Eli Block, who created the original music for this show. For more Eli-related music, go to goodgirlandthebadtimes.com.
Thanks, as always, to Megan Fernandez, the co-creator and editor of Pom Pom Quarterly, and to Amy Collins and the lovely Gail.
Thanks to our interviewees, Christian Aurora and Heather Millard. And, of course, a big thank you to all your Pom Pom buyers, subscribers and listeners.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and why not leave a review? Send any feedback or ideas to podcast@pompommag.com. And don't forget to keep in touch with us via the podcast group on the Pom Pom Ravelry Forum. And thanks again, of course, to The Fibre Company, our Christmas party main sponsors and the sponsors of this mini episode.